Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you today.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Well, the country of Afghanistan is in the news again. It's been there for about 16 years, ever since we went in there, and we were going to try to do something that no other nation ever did, was that is conquer the locals in Afghanistan. They've been trying maybe up to 1,000 years or more, and never seems to work, and we helped make that point, in the 1980s to help throw out the Soviets, and yet here we are. Nobody ever seems to learn a lesson. We're over there, and Trump, we thought maybe he'd have a different foreign policy, but it's the same old stuff. He's planning, he announced 300 Marines. That's not much, but it's escalation compared to what we were supposed to be doing. But I think that is interesting, but they're also talking about a lot more. If you look to the CFR, Biddle at the CFR, who has a reputation for exacerbating wars and things, he says, that's not enough. We need 100,000 troops to send in there to really conquer these people. So I think we've tried that before. I think, I think under Obama, they tried to have a surge, and people still claim that the surge worked. But I think there's some challenges that could be made to that.
Yeah, ironically, the same person you're mentioning, who was one of the advisors to Petraeus and McChrystal and Admiral Mullen in the first, the second or however many, the surge was in 2009, where they sent in 100,000 troops. They said that this is going to be successful. We're going to finally defeat them. Obama said it'll provide us with an exit strategy by putting these troops in. We finally pulled them out in 2012, and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta said the surge did achieve its objectives. And now it's only been a few years later. We got to do another one. But you know, we have a map just to show you what's happened since this great surge that we were supposed to win. And when we get it up, I'll tell you now this. Map was put out by the Taliban, so you know we can expect maybe there are some exaggerations. But if you look at the area that's black, that's 100% Taliban control. The area that's red is 70 to 99% Taliban control. And the area that's orange is 40 to 69% Taliban control. Now, the green areas is where the Taliban have minimal presence. But if you look at the totality of the country, after 16 years of war, it doesn't look like we're doing too well there.
No, sure it doesn't. You know, although the CFR is asking for more troops, push more troops, and the econs in Congress, senators and congressmen think it's exciting and they like it, and they say that we're pleased that Trump has been coming their way and is being much more aggressive. But I think it's interesting, if you read exactly what Biddle was saying at the CFR with these 100,000, it's almost a confession of defeat, you know, because he said, what we would like to do, if we have a lot of troops there, we could influence the Taliban and convince them that what we're doing would look like a victory for us. Just put them out there, have an agreement. We leave, and it looked like a victory for us. And all I could think about was the shenanigans that went on as the closing down of the Vietnam War after not even this many years, where they went to Paris and they had this agreement, and they say, we'll walk away with our heads high, and there's a victory, and both sides agreed to stop the war. Of course, the communists were in charge by then. They continued the war, and after a couple of years, took over the whole country. So, but this is all they're talking about. I mean, I think they've given up on it, and yet they're going to send 300 Marines. And some people don't like to be defeated. That was one of Nixon's problems. Well, I don't, and LBJ, I don't want to be the first American president to really lose a war. I'll tell you what, after 16 years, they have to do some adjusting. And I don't think that this talk is going to do enough. I think they've given up on the fact that we are going to sort all that mess out that you just showed. 500,000 troops won't do the trick because they don't understand the history. They don't understand the people. It's a mess there, and it's a mess for the American people, too, and it's a mess for our military. And people who think that this has something to do with national security interests. The only thing that that looks like they could, you know, exaggerate and say, oh, well, it is because we need this pipeline. We need this oil pipeline to go through Afghanistan, and that's national security interest. But we tell the kids that have to go there and expose them, their lives to this. Oh, well, we're fighting to protect our Constitution and our liberties. A far stretch. I think people are going to wake up. Unfortunately, I don't think that Trump is exactly the person that's going to back away from this. I think it might, on the short run, exacerbate it, and this may get worse before it gets better.
And the thing is, even if we, quote, win in Afghanistan, we lose. And part of that's because of the presence of ISIS. Now, ISIS wasn't there before 2015. All of a sudden, they've started to set up some shop there. The more we fight the Taliban, the more space grows for ISIS to infiltrate the country. So if we defeated the Taliban in Afghanistan, it wouldn't be Switzerland. It would be ISIS. So there's no way to win. And I think it's important to remember that ISIS and Taliban are mortal enemies. They hate each other because of their different views of religion. You know, ISIS views a sort of a caliphate that extends on Islamic law. And the Taliban have always been a tribal and nationalistic form of Islam, and they hate each other because of that. ISIS views the Taliban as being, you know, less pure Muslim because they are nationalistic. So they hate each other. They don't like each other. And it reminds me of Syria, because we're fighting both ISIS and the main enemy of ISIS at the same time.
You know, I think all of what you described so clearly is a result of an ambiguous foreign policy of why we're at war, but we're not at war. We don't declare the war, but we talk about the war, and the war goes on for 15, 16 years. We had a war in Vietnam, a war in Korea, but it's not a war. We don't win the wars. We always lose these wars one way or the other. And I think it's this schizophrenic attitude that we have this so-called moral obligation that they convince the American people of, and yet there's financial interests that continue this policy. But I think the presidents, whether it's Obama or whether it's Trump, I think they're at the stage where they know that, yes, we have to do this, you know, to protect the status quo of the deep state. But we don't want to have to send in 500,000 troops and win the war, because our national security is not threatened. You know, if we were being threatened, every American would help defend this country. That's not the case. So they have this pseudo war going on, and they believe, and Trump's great at this, bluster, intimidation, scare the living daylights out of them, coerce them. And he's claiming that this is working with China. China's backing down. Of course, he gives in, and it's bluster is what it is. So when did it start? A week or so ago, when they thought, well, we're going to teach those rebels up there in Syria, and we're going to launch 59 missiles at this airport. And it wasn't a military operation. It was an intimidation. It was, this is a warning to you. And then, of course, Moab, the big bomb, never dropped before. We're going to teach us that Taliban and ISIS, all this trouble, that was directed at ISIS again.
Yeah.
So now we're trying to find out what's in there, and we're not even allowed in there. The American troops won't let anybody go in and inspect. Who did you kill? What did you do? Well, we do know they blew up a bunch of tunnels, at least. Tunnels we built when we were on the side of the Mujahideen, the Taliban. So we're in there blowing these tunnels up. When will it ever end? But the intimidation never stops. So this is serious, but it's almost hilarious. And that is, we got to scare that guy in North Korea. That guy is dangerous. He is. He's dangerous to mankind because he's so irrational. Militarily, though, I don't think he's a danger to anybody other than his own people, and maybe the South Koreans and maybe the Japanese, that they should be able to handle that. So the bluster man comes along, and we're going to intimidate, we're going to scare this guy. So we say, we're sending the SS Vincent to him. what happened there? Well, the ship pulled out of dark, and they went the wrong way. So what's going on? Is the intimidation going to backfire on them? I would think that Un may be laughing. He says, oh, they're going to send the vessel. They don't even know which direction they're going. Wrong way, Kerrigan. You know, what's happening?
Yeah, it is. It was you know, comical that, you know, we're expecting a war at any minute. A few days ago, we were sending the Vincennes up there, and we're going to start attacking. And, you know, there is sort of an intimidation factor. There's also a way of psychologically intimidating even Americans, that a war can happen anytime. It doesn't a build up. There's no rational start. But, you know, I was thinking something that's interesting. When we first attacked Afghanistan, my oldest son was in diapers. And if this surge starts and it continues, he'll be eligible for a draft if it comes back. That's the entire length of his life. Yeah. He may be drafted into a war that he was in diapers when it started.
And you mentioned that people get to the point and they build up this atmosphere. Anytime something can happen. But, you know, there's some truth to that, because things might not go as they expect. They might not, the enemy that we're directing this activity toward, they might not be intimidated. It might just stir their interest. They might know that we're not going to send the troops in. And I don't think the Taliban is expecting 500,000 troops and that they're going to be wiped out, because you'd have to wipe out the whole country, because that's the way they've lived. Now, I've told the story before about when I visited in Pakistan right on the Afghan border. It was explained to me, look up those mountains, and they look totally barren. And the locals told me, they said, you know, there's a lot of tribes out there, hundreds of thousands of people living in there. And he said, and they've never been conquered. And that was mentioned to me in 1963, 64. Wow. And every time this comes up, I keep thinking, but that's just recent history. People can go back and think 1,000 years ago, we're going to conquer Afghanistan. And here we are trying to conquer Afghanistan. And it just doesn't seem to be working very well.
It just shows, you know, they feel that they're fighting for their homeland, and they fight hard. One of the problems, you know, the surge was supposed to, you know, the U.S. troops were supposed to win, but it was also supposed to really bolster the Afghan army that we put together and we financed. We put billions of dollars to build. But the fact is, when we came in with this 100,000 troops, instead of them adding to the force, they actually backed off. They got lazy. They didn't fight. And it's the same thing now. They feel like they're hired mercenaries, whereas the Taliban have the will to fight because they're fighting for their way of life. Whether we agree with it or not, there's that sense that instills in a soldier, in a warrior, a different ethos, I think.
There was a time when we had propped up Karzai. And I remember clearly, you do too. He came and spoke to the Congress.
Yeah.
You know, he was
standing ovation,
the hero, you know, going there. And but he spoke out in the last week. He said, what are you guys doing? You know, he's probably more independent minded than ever before. But he was criticizing the dropping of this bomb not being, a worthwhile event to solve any problems whatsoever.
He said, you're using our country as a testing ground for your new weapons. And, you know, it's hard to disagree. And he told the people, you've got to kick the Americans out of here. So that's might not have long to live.
That, of course, is always has the moral high ground, the people that come in. And I've said before, and it would apply to us too, let's say there was truly an invasion, you know, where troops are coming in, anything similar to what we do in another country. Do you think Republicans and Democrats would even exist? I think we'd all be fighting, you know, to keep the people out that came in and invaded, especially if they were different people, you know, and we are different. We're Westerners. We're from Europe, and we're from the United States, and we go over into this country, and they've had a way of life. Yeah, it may not be what we think is best, and we think, well, we're going to teach them democracy, you know. What a farce. And I think the sooner this whole policy in that whole region on our side comes to an end, because I see nothing positive coming of this. I see zero chance of us having what is considered a military victory in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, any of these places. It's just not going to work, because we're going to run out of money, and we're going to run out of support, And there's going to be too many people pile up on us if our dollar keeps going downhill like it is right now. Financially, we can be weak enough where people are going to stand up to us, and that's going to be a different ball game.
Yeah, and you know, my takeaway would simply be that Trump has given free rein to the generals to fight this war as they wish, but he has not given them any guidance because he doesn't have guidance. He doesn't have a sense of what the end goal is. So it's a lose-lose scenario for the U.S.
I believe that's absolutely true, and we also have our vice president going over there talking to the Japanese and also to the Koreans, and I keep thinking, well, both the president and the vice president, they are the individuals that didn't volunteer to go fight wars that they could have been involved in. They seem to avoid that. So I don't know whether they qualify as being chicken hawks, but they certainly are people that are aggravating and precipitating and setting the stage for more militarism. And when I see John McCain getting excited and saying and smirking about the idea that Trump has come over to the neocon side, that's troublesome because politically that gives us more of a challenge in this country. We need people to think more clearly about what a foreign policy would be like and should be like if we followed non-intervention. Mind our own business, deal with our problems, but not get involved in the internal affairs of other nations or border disputes or religious wars that have been gone on for years. It's foolhardy, and no matter what they claim, that there's going to be a financial advantage to us, because if we can't get the pipeline through Afghanistan, we're going to get it through some other country and do all these things, and we're going to squeeze the Russians out. It's such a foolish policy. It's time it came to an end. I think we are getting closer to that because more and more people agree with us. They're not hearing this message elsewhere, but they do agree that it's about time we change the foreign policy, and that goes for Republican leadership and Democratic leadership, and it goes along with the fact that the American people are sick and tired of wars, spending, and the deficits that we have run up. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.